This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Sean McDonough will be with us at 12:30. We'll talk Caps, Carolina, with the lead hockey voice on ESPN and ABC, Sean McDonough, at 12:30. Joining us right now, as he does every Friday in this spot, Ben Standig from The Athletic, at Ben Standig on X on Twitter. He's got a podcast called Last Man Standig, but you should read him on The Athletic. He's great, and he joins us right now. So before we get to some team talk, because I do have a couple of specific questions for you, you know the whole schedule, you know, bit that I've been doing for many years. So I've given my season opener and then another game during the course of the season. Is there anything that you've kind of wanted to see? Like, we just took calls for a while on whether or not fans want Washington to open at Philadelphia. Taking maybe your, you know, reporter slash, you know, columnist hat off for a moment, would you like to see the season opener at Philadelphia?
I mean, I think that would be fun, sure. I mean, not only is it a division game, it's, you know the Super Bowl champ gets, you know, right that Thursday night marquee game to open the season. So that would, that would put Washington there. And, you know,
that's what we're talking about, the opening game. Yeah, Philadelphia is going to host that opening game. Yep.
Yeah, and we've talked, you know, over and over again in the last, you know, many several weeks and months about just how many different ways this is just so shocking how Washington is being viewed and how they've risen over the Snyder era, you know, most recently getting the NFL draft. To have Washington on the premier game, the NFL opener against the Super Bowl champ, would be yet another testament to just how far things have changed here. So, yeah, I would be cool with that. I mean, you know, I know sometimes the NFL seems like they like to have a one-off matchup as opposed to a division game necessarily. But look, I think, you know, if you look at the NFC, I think obviously we all have some questions about will Washington regress, how is it going to go, tougher schedule, and so on and so on. But as it stands right now, it's not like I guess you could say maybe the healthy Lions would maybe still be perceived as ahead of Washington. And, you know, but it's not like they're not there. So sure, why not Washington in week one at Philly? I'd be down with that.
Yeah, I don't really have a strong preference one way or the other. I'm looking forward to seeing where all of these high-profile games land because there are so many opportunities for it. But that opening Thursday night game, you know, they haven't always leaned on the most attractive matchup. Last year they had it with the Ravens and Chiefs in the rematch of the AFC title game from the year before. But, you know, the thought about that Thursday night game is they're going to have a massive audience no matter who's playing in it. You know, the year before, Detroit opened at Arrowhead, and Detroit was not supposed to be, you know, a high-profile team. They kind of became that, you know, that particular season, and they won the game. But anyway, All right. So there are a couple of things that I wrote down in advance of you coming on today, because I've talked about a couple of things this week. Reports. There was a report the other day on ESPN.com, part of sort of the aftermath of the draft, that Trey Amos may have fallen a little bit beyond where he was projected. But, you know, we've talked so much about the draft. You know, players 7 through 70, it seemed like they were kind of interchangeable. But there was some discussion that teams had had learned of a back injury that he had had. Do you know anything about that? And as to whether or not, you know, it's the reason that he fell to 61?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I didn't hear that, and I didn't hear anybody discussing that pre-draft. Say, well,
nobody
like,
did
with Will, right? With like, say, with Will Johnson, the Michigan corner, right, sliding from being a potential top 15 pick out of the first round. Like, that was a pretty clear reason as to why that occurred. So, if there was something there, it seems like it must have been fairly minor or not a huge deal, because even in the aftermath, I mean, it's not like anybody came out and said, well, now I can tell you X, Y, or Z. I mean, I know the report from ESPN is sort of doing that, but that was even after the fact of after the fact. So, yeah, I don't know too much about that beyond what was there. And, you know, we're going to obviously be at rookie camp tomorrow, and it'll be our first chance to talk to Dan Quinn since the draft. So, you know, presumably this is something that could come up to ask a question and ask Trey Amos directly himself what he thinks. But I hadn't heard anything, and I don't get this. I mean, I don't get any sense that there's any issue there, but, you know, I mean, he did slip a little bit. I would also just add that, you know, the corners, you know, when I kept looking at the mock drafts and doing, you know, my own and thinking about it, it seemed to me that like they could absolutely take a corner at 30 or at 29, sorry. But as I kept going through the process, I never could figure out, and I never sensed like one of these corners, whether it was Amos or Benjamin Morrison or the Florida State kid or some others, that like anybody was like pulled ahead into that spot. And then it played out that way where they kind of all slipped a little bit. But it's not like anybody went, right? I mean, I don't think anybody went particularly high. So it feels like the group as a whole flipped, and I think there may be something to that. I feel like corners are one of the positions that, even though it's viewed as a bigger deal, I do kind of feel like teams are de-emphasizing it a little bit. Because it's just, you know, the passing game everything is so slanted towards the offense that it's almost, you know, you'd have to have Deion Sanders and Darryl Green out there to, it feels like, at times to make a difference. So I do think that might be a factor with corners, but the back injury specifically, I'm unaware.
Washington's rookie minicamp opens really tomorrow to the media. We'll hear Dan Quinn talk tomorrow. The weather today sort of pushed that back to tomorrow. You know, just going back to the draft real quickly, because I was off on Monday, so we haven't talked since last week. Have you learned anything about, you know, as an example, in the fourth round, was it possible that if one of those edges, four of them came off, I think in the six or seven picks before they picked Jalen Lane, that maybe one of them could have been picked, that, you know, at 61, was there another possibility had a player been on the board? Was there another possibility? We heard the Howie Roseman stuff, which was interesting because Adam Peters admitted that there was a chance to trade back, multiple chances to trade back, including hardly at all, and that may have been Philadelphia, who was at 32 in the moment. Just any sort of intel, you know, here now coming up on essentially 2 weeks after the draft.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that edge rusher was certainly something they were looking at, but, you know, ultimately, you know, as we discussed pre-draft, they had needs, and yet simultaneously were kind of covered everywhere should the board fall a certain way. And it would have been one thing if they had taken sort of like a position where you're like, really, why are you taking that over, you know, in the second or fourth round when you have sort of a clear need at an edge. So, but they didn't do that, right? I mean, they absolutely need more speed on offense.
Sure.
Not to mention in the return game. So taking a guy like Lane, you know, just makes a ton of sense. Now, sure, could they have, like you said, there was a lot of those edge guys that went off the board right before them or right around that pick, and could that have changed things? You know, maybe, but again, like, here's the thing. As much as we all talk about edge, and I'm not saying it's not an issue, but it is concerning that they didn't do this. And this will certainly be a question, again, to bring up to Dan Quinn tomorrow when we talk to him. But, like, the way I look at it, like, the Connerly, the pick, the idea of an offensive tackle, I think that's going to be – that's something that has a chance to be a greater impact than potentially an edge guy at that spot in terms of, like, an offensive tackle is going to start every play. An edge guy is going to rotate. And I don't – you know, I don't think they had to force it. There were guys you could get later. Second round, they absolutely had to get – and by the way, in the division that they're in, Micah Parsons, the Giants have Brian Burns, Kayvon Thibodeau, and they were about to draft Abdul Carter, right? The Eagles, we know the depth that they have along the line. So it's an obvious something you need right off the bat there. In terms of the corners, same thing in the division, right? CeeDee Lamb, Neighbors, the Eagles have A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Obviously now Dallas even has George Pickens. So, like, they absolutely needed that. That was a clear – if they hadn't drafted a cornerback, let's just say, I think that would have been like a position we'd all be going, what are they doing here? Right, I mean, you know, you can get exposed, as we know, at that spot, and they didn't have anybody, or they didn't have enough. I would say, I would make an argument for. And then again, with that speed, if they don't add a guy like Lane with his profile, sure, they added Deebo Samuel, and I'm a believer that you can find receivers, but that type of playmaking ability, that speed, that is something they just did not have. So I think like all those spots were, again, maybe it's all on us. Maybe we just over discussed the edge rusher scenario. It is still the most glaring omission of this roster that they don't have anybody young, you know, highly athletic relative to NFL players. I mean, at that spot, and that's in a very important position. But they also were 30th against the run last year, and they clearly made a choice to go after guys that could help that. Javon Kinlaw will play some on the edge. Dietrich Wise is a better two-way player, whereas like Dante Fowler was much more of a just pure pass rusher type. So I think they made they did address the position, but they addressed it in terms of the run defense more than they did the pass rush. And, you know, to that end, it's not like they ignored it. It's just the way we're looking at it. They didn't get that guy. So, sure, I think if the board had gone a different way, maybe they would have done it. But I on some level, again, I'm not trying to backtrack off of, you know, I thought they would take an edge somewhere too, but they really needed these other things as much or more for this year's roster. Long term, you got to get an edge. But for this year, I think you can make an argument that these other positions were more glaring than edge when you factor in the run defense part.
How much, just one more on kind of the draft, how much do you think it is what maybe you just described, where the board just didn't fall the way it would have needed to fall for them to take a defensive edge? Or is part of it that we are underrating or not discussing enough the possibility that they really like what they have?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, I mean, they obviously went out and signed these players. Like, look, let's be real. None of us know what Jacob Martin's all about, right? I don't know. I mean, I've read as much as everybody else has. I've looked at some of the tape. Who knows?
Do they you want think, to tell everybody hey, who that is?
Oh, sure. I'm one of their free agents that they signed. He had three sacks last year. He's the guy that maybe is the most, you're most hopeful can give them that spark off the edge. But, look, you know, he's been a guy that's been in the league, hasn't done a ton. But, look, they think, hey, with our system, with what we want to do, we can utilize him in ways that's going to free him up, especially if we get better play out of the middle with Daron Payne and Johnny Newton and now Kinlaw, and that's going to free him up for some one-on-ones, and we think this guy can take advantage. Sure, maybe. I don't know. I mean, Dorrance Armstrong's sack numbers last year were down relative to his years in Dallas. Do they think – but he played very well, right, in some of the playoff runs. So do they think, hey, maybe we figure out some better ways to use Dorrance Armstrong. That'll get us going? Perhaps. Obviously, Frankie Louvu is still a factor. And, you know, pass rush is obviously highly important for all aspects of the defense, but, you know, they did make moves towards the secondary to help there. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, again, I think the run defense part is probably what we're ignoring to an extent in terms of their liking of this. I imagine they're going to look at it and think Dietrich Wise is a better two-way player than the options we had at that spot a year ago. Getting Javon Kinlaw clearly is a nod towards helping out on that run defense, being this elephant edge guy who's focused more on stopping the run than necessarily getting after the quarterback. So, yeah, I think they viewed these things as important. It's just that they didn't get, like, one guy. Right, Kinlaw was kind of like, really? Okay, that's interesting. Adam Peters knows this guy, but that was kind of out of the blue, especially for the contract, 3 years, $45 million. And they didn't draft somebody. So we're looking at it like, boy, they didn't get anybody that we would have figured. They obviously have a different view of it. So, yeah, I think they think it's a better group. And, again, against the run, I think it should be. But overall, we'll see. I mean, you still have to get Jalen Hurts and Dak Prescott off their spots, right? So, did they do enough of that? I don't know. We can make that claim. But, again, how many of us projected what was going to happen last year to happen? So, well, you know, got to give them a little benefit of that they have a good feel. Like, you know, that's the thing last year, right? Other than Michael Davis, the cornerback, almost every single one of their free agent moves like worked out as well as you could probably hope, or at least pretty close.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Maybe, you know, maybe they see something in some of these guys that we, you know, we just haven't yet.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
You wrote today about the undrafted free agent group that they're bringing in. Just kind of recap the, you know, 8, 9, 10 players that they've brought in by sort of telling everybody who they clearly like the most based on the guarantees that they gave. I know that's not always a dead giveaway because sometimes it's the only way to get the player in because there's demand for that player, but who of the undrafted free agents have the best shot of making the team, and who got the biggest guaranteed money?
Sure. And I know based on, like, comments I get or questions I get, people are really jacked for these undrafted guys or even the rookie camp invitation guys.
Yeah.
Slow the roll on that stuff. I mean, most of the time these things don't pan out at all. But, look, there were guys like last year, Tyler Owens and Colson Yankoff made the roster. In years past, Cam Sims and Danny Johnson were undrafted free agents, and, you know, neither one was like a dynamo, but they both played several years for the command for Washington in the league, and they were helpful at times. So, you know, we'll see. I think there, you mentioned, I use my guy, Dane Brugler's guide, because, you know, we're talking this level of player. Only a guy like crazy like Dane is going to know a lot about these guys. But Ja'Cory Brooks, the receiver from Louisville, I've mentioned, I think, maybe here before as well. You know, he's a really interesting one. The receivers are always the fun watches in camp because, you know, they can make these spectacular plays, and we're watching the ball more than we're watching the line and things like that. And here's a guy who's sort of that classic version of that. 6'2", receiver, was a 5-star recruit to Alabama. You know, obviously Alabama has always had one of the deeper rosters. In the first 2 years, he was mainly a special teams guy, was thought to maybe was on the verge of a breakout as a junior year, but then he suffered a season-ending labrum tear. He did have a block punt in each of his first 3 seasons with Alabama. Then he transfers to Louisville, plays with Tyler Shuck, who obviously was a second-round pick with the Saints this year, and was a first-team All-ACC selection, over 1,000 yards, 9 touchdowns, primarily playing on the outside. You know, I think the fact that he has shown an aptitude on special teams, he can also return kicks and punts, is where I think that he's got an opportunity here because, again, if you look at that room, Terry McLaurin, Deebo Samuel, Noah Brown, Michael Gallup, these guys are not typically playing on special teams. I mean, Deebo did a little bit last year, but obviously, you know, that's not really what he's going to be looking to do. So, you know, that's a position, though, like where – if you're going to have six players make the team, you're really going to have four guys that are not on special teams. That seems a bit much, perhaps. So maybe there's an opportunity for him to sneak in there. Likely he would be a practice squad guy, but I think he's a name to keep an eye on for sure. You mentioned some of the bonus money. Carlin Vigors, a defensive back out of Louisiana Monroe.
Yeah, tell everybody about Carlin Vigors, DB from Louisiana Monroe. They gave him some significant guaranteed money relative to the other undrafteds, right?
Yeah, he got $259,000 guaranteed. Another cornerback, Fentrell Cypress out of Florida State, got about $145,000. What's interesting about both of these guys is, like, when I was looking at cornerbacks that Washington might take in the draft, guys, I was focusing on Siobhan Revell, the kid out of Florida State, the guy who played with Cypress down there, and Trey Amos were like, these guys were press corners, and this is a style that, you know, fits with what Washington wants to do, and Vigors has that sort of size dimension that makes a lot of sense. 6'1", 205, he's got that press corner style. He played extensively over 3 years in college, you know, not a ton of stats, and, you know, Louisiana Monroe is obviously, from a competition standpoint, far below the power conference school,
yeah,
and so on. But, you know, they're taking a risk on, or they're taking a chance on the traits, and, you know, again, his size, his press coverage ability, this, and, you know, this is the type of player you want to take a shot on. And, you know, I think their cornerback group, and I would say the same thing with Cypress, a guy who also got good money, as an undrafted guy. I will note that, you know, Dane Brugler, he looked at, I don't even know what the final number is, 2,000 players, something insane. But he only wrote like summaries on about like 400 of them. Brooks was one that got a write-up, and Cypress was another one. So I guess Dane has Cypress in his head ranked ahead of Vigors. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. But both those guys, like I said, in general, fit the same kind of size and style profile. And that's what you're looking to do. By the way, this is something I think is just so important. It isn't enough to just say, go get me talent. Go get a guy who makes sense. Like, what do we keep hearing this week about George Pickens getting traded? Well, he's not a Mike Tomlin kind of a guy. Well, they picked him. They took him in the second round. Are they just supposed to – is the GM not paying attention to what a supposed Mike Tomlin player is? I wrote last season that one of the big reasons why this group had success was that Adam Peters didn't just – arrogantly say, I think this guy is good, we're going to pick him and let the coach deal with it. He figured out, hey, Dan Quinn, hey, coaching staff, what are some of the things you're looking for? And then let me go out and find that guy. So, again, I don't know that either one of these Vigors or Cypress is going to factor in at all. Maybe they're practice squad guys, maybe not. But stylistically, they make sense for what is going on here. And that, to me, is as important as anything else, that they understand who they are, what they're trying to do, and find players that could fit. Because if they ever did have to play, you don't want somebody who's like a complete, it doesn't make any sense at all for what you're trying to do. So I think those guys, you know, again, a shot to make the 53 is special teams is going to have to be their hope, like it was with Owens and Yankoff. Yeah. But, you know, there's some optimism here in terms of the type of player these guys are.
We do this every year, okay, with, you know, people swearing on, you know, they watched Carlin Vigors and there's no chance he's not going to make the team. You know, I talked about just the, you know, the running back merit in the seventh round. One out of the last 33 running backs over the last 10 drafts drafted in the seventh round has made an impact in the NFL. And that's Isaiah Pacheco. So the odds are not stacked in his favor in terms of making a big impact. But it's sometimes you're talking about minutia, and I just asked you about the minutia. It doesn't really turn out to be much, but you know, they got to fill out the roster. You got to have 90 going to camp, and they have 90 now. I've got 3 minutes. I want to ask you about maybe another domino to fall, you know, whether it is Matthew Judon or Von Miller or Za'Darius Smith or a Nick Chubb. You texted me last week and you said, why are you talking about Nick Chubb? And I just said, because I like him a lot, and I think they should look at him just to check the health. Him and J.K. Dobbins are still sitting out there as free agents, and if they thought he was healthy, and Cleveland is not going to re-sign Chubb, you know, I would certainly take a look at it. So do you think that there's a chance that there's another big add before training camp? And if so, what's your hunch on who it would be?
Yeah, I would maybe say not necessarily before training camp, like maybe it's during, you know, once they get the guys out on the field. But, you know, maybe they make an assessment in minicamp or OTAs that, hey, you know, we kind of need more. But, you know, sometimes that big light bulb moment may not happen until they're really getting after it in camp. Yeah, but look, if you pointed to two positions, one would be the edge for the reasons that we just discussed. And, you know, there are some guys out there, you know, Jadeveon Clowney was just released by Carolina. You know, he's a known guy, of course.
No ties to Washington, though, right? I was going through the Clowney.
Yeah.
Am I right about that? Because I went through almost everything looking for any sort of relationship. I'm sure you did it, too.
Correct. I did. I did not notice anything of note. That does obviously seem to be a common factor with, you know, not just Washington, but a lot of teams. But, no, I didn't see anything obvious there. You know, look, I think all those potential guys, Za'Darius Smith, et cetera, Von Miller, like they're all basically, you know, the same type of profile. They're over 30, have had big success in the past with sacks and big plays. But, you know, we're now just rotational pieces. And, you know, look, are any of those guys better than, say, Cleveland Farrell? I don't know. Maybe. I mean, you know, you could make an argument in certain ways. But I don't know that the variance is that significant to where you feel like you have to do something. You know, you mentioned the Nick Chubb thing. You know, the running back room is still one where I was my take was they need to get speed on offense. I don't really care where it comes from, and obviously they went with the receiver. I still do wonder about the running back room to an extent, though.
Me
and
too.
I think you know, one thing I've wanted to try to figure out that I haven't done as much as I haven't gotten as far as I would like is what happened to the running game last year? Was it because the offensive line was just really struggling to create opportunities? Clearly, they thought they needed an offensive line upgrade. Not that Laramie Tunsil is a run blocker, but whatever. He's obviously very good than they draft Connerly. But, you know, is Brian Robinson consistent enough? Can they rely on Austin Ekeler to stay healthy, et cetera? I still wonder about that. Not that there's any really dynamic running backs out there. You mentioned Chubb. You know, maybe an extra year removed from his significant injury changes things, but, you know, there's just some guys out there. But I still wonder if that's a spot where maybe there's some change potentially happening or could happen. You know, I'm not saying it would, but, like, and I wrote about this the other day. Somebody asked me in my mailbag about, are there players that you could see getting traded the way that Jahan Dotson and John Ridgeway were traded last year to recoup some picks? And, you know, I think Brian Robinson was a name that I mentioned because, again, it's not that it's necessarily likely or that, you know, that they have somebody who would be better than him. But what happened with that last year? He obviously, his numbers fell way off. He's not a guy that you could put out there all three downs. He's limited as a pass blocker. Yeah. Do they want somebody who's at least, even if it's not somebody who has his maybe upside between the tackles, somebody who's more consistent across the board? Perhaps. And maybe one of those guys is Chubb or somebody else. So I think those are the two spots to me that if something is going to happen sooner than later or during camp would be the two areas to look at.
I agree. Have a good weekend. I'll talk to you.
Likewise, man. See ya.
Ben Standig, everybody. Up next, Sean McDonough will jump on with us. Of course, he is the lead hockey voice for ABC ESPN.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The revolution redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.